Yeah, you do have like a dot-com type bubble in the AI stuff, but in general, with the prospect of war in Europe, the big capital comes. It usually goes into stuff like the Dow. They're not going into the AI stuff, and they're just really parking money. For safety.
Do you see Europe potentially breaking apart here?
Oh, yeah. I mean, our computer has shown, you know, that the EU will collapse.
Gosh.
I mean, as you know, they called me in when they were creating this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And being a trader, I'm not an academic. I mean, I know how you actually do trade, you know, traded in these rooms and stuff. So I warned them that they had to consolidate the debt if the euro was going to compete with the dollar. So it's a matter of confidence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't manipulate people's confidence just with interest rates.
Yeah.
You have to give them something to make them think that it's going to change.
Martin Armstrong. Marty, good morning to you, my friend. How are you?
Okay, just watching the world go completely insane, but...
Yeah, right? So all my viewers and listeners, Marty and I started talking literally right before this, and I said some of the best conversations happen off camera, so I want to get all of this, and that's exactly what he said to me, is watching the world go insane. Let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about the markets first. I don't know what you think of the stock market here. Is this looks just like a parabolic blow off top? What are your thoughts? And does this still have some room to go?
Well, longer term, yes. What you have to understand is that. Yeah, you do have like a dot-com type bubble in the AI stuff, but in general, with the prospect of war in Europe, the big capital comes. It usually goes into stuff like the Dow. They're not going into the AI stuff, and they're just really parking money. For safety. We saw that, you know, with World War One, World War Two. And if Europe has a history of capital controls,
mm-hmm.
and you can look up the charts. I mean, even London closed the stock market, you know, for World War One. What happens is that they are afraid of capital fleeing. Most people don't realize, but the world economy was more global before World War One than it is today.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have all the progressive Marxist socialistic nonsense, and you know, bonds traded, the same bonds traded in New York, London, Paris, and St. Petersburg.
Yeah.
So capital was able to, you know, there wasn't restraints and things of this nature. What you have to understand is this whole like tariff protectionism type stuff really came after World War One,
mm-hmm.
mainly because Europe committed suicide, you know, and so then they put in very stiff tariffs and regulations to try and regenerate their own industries.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Europe was the primary supplier of sugar. It came from beets. So when World War One happened, the sugar plantations in Cuba exploded because they wiped out the markets. So then you see, you know, they put in these big tariffs and things of this nature. I mean, the Democrats were always like blaming Smoot-Hawley because they were two Republicans. But that was really a response to the big tariffs of Europe. We didn't start that game. But I mean, it's logical why they did that. I mean, you wiped out all your industry. Even farmland was ruined, and et cetera. So they put on all these tariffs and to try and regenerate their economy. So then, you know, before World War One, and even if you look back to the Roman Empire, there were some tariffs, yes, but it was mainly for revenue purposes. Okay, after World War One, we got into this Marxist socialistic thing where it was to protect jobs. So the focus shifted. So, you know, this is, you know, been a plague for Trump trying to deal with Europe. Europe is actually far worse than China or anything else. Mainly because it's not just tariffs that they engage in. It's they use indirect means of blocking trade, like, oh well, if you grew, you know, asparagus with this fertilizer which we have outlawed here, it can't come here, you know, stuff like that. So it's really a quagmire of world trade. But if you really step back and you look at this objectively, you'd be surprised at how free the world was before World War One.
Right. Well, to work that out a little bit more for me, do you see, and talk a little bit about that, do you see Europe, it seems to me, is in a terrible place, a terrible position, especially the UK, especially Germany, and especially France. Do you see that those situations that they have in those countries spreading, meaning it seems like a popular rising up? And do you see that, yeah, do you see Europe potentially breaking apart here?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, our computer has shown, you know, that the EU will collapse. It's,
gosh.
I mean, as you know, they called me in when they were creating this thing. And being a trader, I'm not an academic. I mean, I know how you actually do trade, you know, trade in these rooms and stuff. So I warned them that they had to consolidate the debt if the euro was going to compete with the dollar. If I'm a fund manager, I can pick up the phone and I can say, buy me, you know, $10 billion worth of U.S. treasuries. It's the deepest market in the world. I can't do that with Europe. I still have to make the same decision as if there is no euro. Do I want UK? Do I want, you know, France? Do I want Germany? Because they never consolidated debt. And that was Helmut Kohl. He admitted even before he died that he acted like a dictator and that he never allowed the German people to vote because he said he would have lost 7-3. So he took Germany into the euro, but as a, you know, he was afraid of the population. They would see it, a consolidation debt, they would see it as bailing out Greece or Italy, or et cetera. So he said no consolidation. Now, here's the real problem that we face going forward. It's much more serious than people realize. All right. Take the banking system. In the United States, a bank reserves are treasuries. All right. They're not debt from California. All right.
Right.
In Europe, because you never consolidated, you have all these banks that have a, you know, a cornucopia of debt from all the members, to be equally fair. So we saw that when Greece went down in 2010. The traders made a lot of money shorting Greece, and immediately they say, who's next? Oh, Spain, you know. And so as you refer to, you have two finance ministers, UK and France, admitting they may need a IMF bailout.
Yeah.
France is the second largest economy in the EU.
Yeah.
You know, right? Germany, which is 25% of the EU, has committed economic suicide.
Right.
I mean, first you had the COVID, then they did the climate change nonsense. You wiped out so many small businesses. And then, you know, it just remind me of that Mel Brooks movie, you know, Blazing Saddles, where the black guy puts the gun to his own head and say, you move and the black guy gets it, you know. Yeah. I mean, that's what Germany did to Russia. Mm-hmm. We're going to, you know, we're blocking all your energy. Okay, that's really a good idea. and so their energy costs have gone through the ceiling.
Right.
Their industry's falling apart. Then they told the auto industry, oh, you can't do gas. You got to manufacture, you know, electric cars. So then you got tens of thousands of people protesting against Volkswagen.
Right.
It's like, when I say I'm watching the girl, you know, world go insane, it's yeah. like whatever stupid decision they could have possibly made, they did.
They did.
I mean, there's just nothing logical about this.
Yeah.
The German economy has shrunk at least by 3%.
I know. It's crazy.
You're talking about the number of jobs, okay?
Right.
We're not talking about GDP. We're talking about actually the number of possible jobs.
Right.
Add to that the migrant crisis.
Yeah.
Had, you can look it up, in 1844, there were gun battles on the streets in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Because you had, you know, the Irish coming in, fleeing, you know, the famine over there. But we were in the middle of a recession.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, you got a job for 10, well, I'll do it for $8, you know.
Yeah.
And so that created actual gun battles. So the worst thing you can do is allow migration coming in when the economy's declining.
Yeah.
Booming, yes. Okay. Then there's plenty of jobs. When you're contracting, it's the exact opposite. So this is your civil unrest rising in Europe.
Yeah.
It's just a real mess, you know. And so you have people you're paying basically to sit home and watch TV. And now you're saying you may need an IMF bailout.
Right.
I mean,
that makes no sense. Yeah. Walk me through the other side of that. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. It's just, yeah. I just said, destroying your economy.
Yeah. Walk me through the other side of this, meaning, okay, how does Europe get through this? And then what does it look like on the other side? And then let's talk about the US, because he had a bunch of auto, or he had a big auto loaner just went belly up. And the U.S. consumer, it looks like it's at its capacity. But tell me what it looks like on the other side for Europe, if you would.
I mean, I do interviews from Netherlands down to Palermo. And I would say 3 years ago, when they would ask me that question, do you really think the EU is going to break up? And I say yes. It was maybe a little skeptical. Today, it's you know, the response is when.
right.
They're all pretty much fed up with this, and I found it interesting that even Merz out of Germany came out and criticized the EU. over its migrant policies and saying you've gone too far.
Yeah.
You know, I was speaking to people in the government of Romania, and they were actually ordered by the EU to accept another 100,000 Middle Easterner. What are we going to do with them? You know, give them free food and lunch money or something? What? I mean, you have these people that are, I mean, even in the United States, you have a lot of these Democrats that just don't get it. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a friend who always voted Democrat. And mm-hmm. when I went to go vote, showed me a picture of a room, basically it said all genders. So you know who I'm voting for. I mean, they don't get it. You know, I mean, we have offices in Thailand, which is the transgender capital of the world. But they're more respectful. They don't say you have to call them a woman. Mm-hmm. They call themselves ladyboys.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Over here, it's like, oh, it's an insult. You have to call me a woman. You can't call your mother a mother. It's a birthing machine. You know, what is all this nonsense?
Yeah.
You know, and now we have one gay guy that was in the company, and even he said he's confused. He said, there's so many different, he said, there was 70 some labels. He said, I don't even know what the heck to call anybody anymore. Right. And it's like, it's weird because then I have to say, well, how do you like to have sex so I know what label to use? You know,
right.
Isn't
right.
that a violation of privacy or something? I mean,
right, right.
I really don't want to know that information, you know?
Right. But, yeah. Well, so, go ahead.
So it that insanity here, you're seeing that in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's tearing it apart. Once they move from economic equality to all this craziness, migrants, and you have to take them, and burning churches, and in England, giving a guy 22 months in prison because he said he's tired of his money going to migrants who rape our kids.
Yeah,
he gets 22 months in prison for that.
That's crazy.
You know, it's, I was asked if I would come over to Britain. I said, I'm sorry, we'll no longer come.
Yeah.
I said, they'll lock me up for something I said 10 years ago, you know?
Yeah.
It's just,
I thought about that. It's too big of a risk.
Stammer is a typical dictator and this is what you're seeing in Europe. When Vance was there, talking at the Munich conference about free speech. You know, they know they're wrong. Mm-hmm. Instead of saying, well, gee, maybe we've gone too far. No, let's punish anybody that says we're wrong.
Yeah, right.
It's like, you know, Newsom in California, all these companies are leaving. Instead of saying, well, why are they leaving? You know, well, let's punish them. We'll put an exit tax.
Right.
You know, this is classic denial from a political standpoint.
Right. Yeah, totally.
And I would not invest anything in California.
Yeah.
Because there's just no possibility of rational reform.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the only time you'll get that is in a crisis.
Yeah.
So they have to crash and burn first before people say, wait a minute, this is too much. And you're seeing that in everywhere, really, throughout Europe. And for Merz to actually come out and criticize the EU about this migrant policy is showing you that even he, who was basically a real globalist, is starting to wake up and say, wait a minute, we got a problem here.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's when everybody came from Europe to America, I mean, I sat down with them back in 98, to, you know, to help create the Euro and all that. And I told them, I said, you don't know what made America great. And they said, what's that? I said, it was discrimination. Oh, my God. How can you say that? I said, because it was fair. Mm-hmm. Whoever was last off the boat didn't get a job until they spoke English. So today you ask an American, what are you? Go, oh, I'm half German, half Irish, half that. You don't see that in Europe. I mean, yeah, there are always some exceptions. But the difference is that once everybody spoke the same language, then everybody intermarried. It's that where, you know, in Europe, this is part of the problem with Ukraine, the Balkans, etc. I mean, you could look it up. We handed like a handful of jets to Greece.
Right.
And what did they say? Oh, now we can do a sneak attack on Turkey. You know,
right.
Another NATO country. All right. Yeah. But this ethnic hatred, you know, between the Greeks and the Turks, go back to Alexander the Great.
Yeah.
You know, it's
good luck solving that.
Yeah. The Balkans, it's all the same. It, you know, they, my doctor is basically, you know, from Serbia, and, you know, she'll say, you know, oh, those damn Armenians, you know, I mean, these things live on
generations
from generation to generation.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, Iran versus, you know, Israel.
Yeah.
You really, you're talking about my God against your God, you know? I mean, where's the negotiation?
Yeah, good luck. Good luck.
There's some things you just can't do.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about what's going on in the U.S. here. You just had, again, are the banks really that much in trouble here in the U.S.? Yeah. And do you still see money flowing here to the U.S.? Because it looks like it's really bubbly.
Right now, it looks as though with the possibility of peace talks, you're getting the crack back down in gold and silver, etc. And this is all capital flows. Right. As I've said, you know, before, you know, I was in the gold business back in the 80s, and gold went from 100 to 400 between 76 and December 79. But it went from 400 to 875 in the last 6 weeks. Why? That's when Russia invaded Afghanistan. So it's not inflation. It's geopolitical issues. This is why the central banks have been buying gold. They don't care if it's going up or down. Don't look at them as a trader. All right. If Europe goes to war with Russia and they lose, their bonds are worthless.
Yeah.
Just like Confederate bonds. Okay. They look pretty, framed up, very nice, but that's all you're going to get out of it. This is why, you know, I think the worst part of the Biden administration was that they wanted him there because they, you know, basically he wasn't really there.
Right.
So the bureaucracy really got to run everything. And so I find it very curious. You had Garland, you had Blinken, and you had Victoria Nuland running the State Department, Department of Justice. All three claim to be from the Ukraine region. All three claim that their families are persecuted by Russians. I know a lot of people, three from the very same area, the same complaint, all in the Biden administration. How the hell does that happen? That's beyond coincidence.
Yeah.
And it was Blinken that took Russia out of SWIFT. This is the typical neocon bullshit, really. Oh,
Yeah.
if we punish the Russian people, they'll overthrow their government and they'll give them a ticker tape parade and thank them. It has never happened once.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. We imposed sanctions on Castro in Cuba in 1960. They are still there.
Yeah. Yeah.
We imposed sanctions on Iran 1979 to overthrow their government. Ayatollah is still there.
Yeah.
This asinine theory that they have does not work. You cannot show me one incident where it actually worked. Right?
Yeah.
When Blinken removed Russian banks from SWIFT, what happened? That sent a red flag to everybody else.
Yeah.
If we don't do what Blinken orders us to do, he'll do it to us. So that created BRICS. You know, BRICS had nothing to do with gold or anything else. It's geopolitical. He even threatened China. If you continue to help Russia, we'll do the same to you. You idiot.
Right.
I mean, the guy belongs, you know, in my opinion, I think he belongs in prison.
Yeah, right.
You know, he's usurped American power for personal issues. And that'd be kind of like Trump sending the Washington, agricultural department to go cut his grass down in Florida. You know what I mean?
Right.
You just can't do stuff like this. You know, and so China, that created BRICS.
Yeah.
China started dumping U.S., debt and buying gold.
Buying gold, yeah.
Why? Because gold's neutral. It doesn't matter. And with Blinken threatening World War III to China, they held 10% of the U.S. national debt. You go to war with them, you think we're going to pay the interest on that? Forget it. They'll default.
Right.
You always do that in war.
Yeah. Do you see that continuing? Do you see them continuing to buy not only China, but all the other central banks around the world?
I think the 2,000 pound gorilla in the corner of the room is the EU. You just had even the UK representative coming out. I think he just came out, within the last 24 hours, saying that NATO can send troops into Ukraine.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Look, Europe is going bust.
Yeah.
And you have two choices. You either start a war as a diversion. And, oh, it's Putin, Putin, Putin. Or when you do go bust and the pensions can't be paid, you're going to have people storming the parliaments with their pitchforks. That's your choice. And as I said, because there is no centralized national debt for Europe, France gets into trouble. It's not just you're undermining all the banks. So you're going to start shorting banks who has the most French debt? Let's short that one. So you're looking at undermining the banking system. The pension system, by law, on average, 70% must have government debt, which they took to negative in 2014.
Right.
I warned them. I said, do you realize you're strip mining your own pension funds and banks?
Right.
But again, they were following Keynesian economics, and which doesn't work. And when Keynes came up with that idea, you could at least say it sounded logical, because U.S. had a balanced budget. So raising interest rates, lowering interest rates affected us. But today, the government's the biggest borrower in the room.
Right.
So the central banks have lost all power. Powell raises interest rates. Do you really think somebody in Congress says, oh, gee, they want us to spend less?
Yeah.
Never going to happen.
Yeah.
The interest expenditures just explode. We're at $1 trillion this year. We're, when Ronald Reagan came to power, the national debt hit $1 trillion.
Yeah, yeah.
So well, it's a mess. It's a mess.
Yeah, well, on that note, do you see more of a deflationary scenario playing out there with a significant correction in asset prices, or is there just too much, especially here in the U.S., or is there just too much money flowing here to the U.S. and there's too much monetary inflation?
The Fed has been reducing its balance sheet. Okay, so it gets criticized if it tries to raise interest rates to reduce inflation. So basically, it reduces its balance sheet in the alternative. I disagree with Trump on his views of Powell. Powell, I think, is being much more practical and looking at this rationally. You go into war and debts are going to explode. So, and whereas Trump, he's a borrower, he's not a lender.
Yeah.
So he always wants the lowest possible interest rate. And oh, then that's, but it doesn't work that way.
Right.
What Europe found going negative in, with interest rates in 2014, and they didn't even get back to zero until 2022. Right. What happened? One of the number one sales was safes. People just pulled their cash out of the banks, kept it home, because then they were just, the bank was just kept, you know, charging them money every time for even half cash. So they didn't spend it. When you look at, I mean, even the Roman Empire, during the third century, you had 60 emperors within 100 years. The average was maybe one and a half years, all right? That's when you find the greatest number of hoards of Roman coins.
Yeah.
But if you don't trust the future, you hoard. You save. Yeah. Okay? Yeah. So they, in that case, they just bury it, all right? There was a hoard in 2007 discovered in Britain with over 50,000 coins in it. You know, I guess the guy didn't survive to come back, you know? This is what happens in a recession. Yeah. That's what creates the deflation. People don't spend, they save. All right. So then the theory is, oh, if we lower interest rates, then maybe they'll borrow and spend. It doesn't work that way. All right. We've done studies on this. Interest rates have been everywhere. New York Stock Exchange call money rates reached 200% in 1899. All right. One of the lowest levels was for 1929 at 6%. All right. It's basically, if you think the stock market will double next year, you'll pay 20% interest.
Right.
But if you don't think it's going to go up one, you're not going to pay one.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of confidence. You know, you can't manipulate people's confidence just with interest rates. You have to give them something to make them think that it's going to change.
Yeah.
Europe's not doing that.
Yeah.
As we just said about California, oh, let's punish them if they leave. They don't reform.
Nothing changes.
They, once you give power to any government agency, good luck in getting it back.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's what they say about communism and socialism. You can vote your way in, but you got to shoot your way out.
Yeah. It's quite true. Talk a little bit about your model is predicting war, and it's never been wrong, predicting war next year. Talk a little bit about where do you see, or what does the model see where that it will be more than likely? And again, I'm on the record of hoping it's wrong, just for humanitarian purposes, but
Oh, so
yeah, just so all my listeners and viewers know. But yeah, where do you see that likely happening, if you would?
we have two separate models.
Okay.
One is what on civil unrest, and that's where revolutions come from, all right? Then the other one is international war.
Okay.
And this international war is not like World War One or Two. This is showing up on a global scale. So, like you're just seeing, conflicts from, Thailand, Cambodia, India, Pakistan, and now Pakistan, Afghanistan, Israel, Gaza, Iran. I mean, it's everywhere. It seems as though whatever old grudge there was is resurfacing. And what the computer shows, which makes sense, is that when the economy's booming, you don't see war. Everybody's fat and happy. We're all having a good time. Go out to dinner, go to a movie, whatever. It's when you lose. You're pissed off. Why is this happening? Go get them. Look, I've dealt with governments around the world for more than 40 years. And this is what I have learned. When I was young and naive, I thought I could actually make a difference and help. You realize you can't. I can walk in and say, if we don't do this, 25 million people will die tomorrow. And they'll go, yeah, well, maybe you're wrong. From a politician standpoint, if I want to run for Congress, and I say to you, look, vote for me because I saved your job. You're going to look at me and say, how do I know I would have lost it? It's better you lose it. Then I say, vote for me, I'll get the guy that did it. This is why, I was getting called into different, committees and crashes and stuff like that. And it became very frustrating because I saw they do the same thing all the time. Even when I was called into 87 crash, first words, we're going to find the guy that shorted this market and forced it down. And I just said, excuse me. Do you realize every investigation began with those same words since 1907 and nobody has been found? But it's always the same thing. It's never changes. And the most frustrating part, somebody steps up, oh, we should do this. Oh, that's a good idea. Let's give it a try. Never have I seen even one time any committee ever say, has anybody done this before? Did it work? They don't ask that question. They
They don't
just
really
don't.
care.
I don't know. History books have been banned in Washington or Brussels or something.
What do you have any expectation or anything that you're looking for from really now until the end of the year or really going into New Year? Is it just the acceleration of potential war or acceleration of money printing or a debt bomb explosion? What expectation do you have?
The computer is showing a panic cycle, both in war next year as well as in the euro. And I would expect, I mean, even taking the Middle East, to me, they're the same as our neocons. And I've been to dinner with some of these people, and you can't get, I can't get my head around their even thinking process. Only way I can explain it is fine from the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, they hated communism. And so when communism fell, it suddenly, they didn't care. It just turned into, and I, because I was in Washington at the time, Reagan wanted to go meet with Gorbachev, and they wanted to stop that. And they said, oh, they couldn't call him a communist anymore. So they said, oh, you can never trust a Russian. So, Reagan went, and if he didn't go, the Berlin Wall would never have fallen. Come on. I mean, even Sun Tzu, basically, in his Art of War, said, if you don't know yourself and your enemy, you will lose. And just look at what they do. And this is my frustration that I see in Europe. Trump is the only one who has actually tried to negotiate with Putin. The rest of them all take the same directions from the neocons and NATO. Oh, don't talk to him. He's evil. He's this. Why? Because if you talk to him, then maybe you do get peace.
Right, exactly.
If you prevent
Exactly.
any discussion, you only get war.
Yeah.
And this is, what they're all doing.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that first White House meeting with Zelensky that turned into a shouting match. Why? Have very good contacts directly in Ukraine. I got a phone call. Boris Johnson, 3 days before, went to Ukraine, instructed Zelensky. The signing was supposed to be in Kiev. He instructed Zelensky, you insist on going to the White House and embarrass Trump into keeping the funding going for this war. I passed on that information. I said, hey, and I think it was Rubio who came out and said at the last minute, Zelensky insisted on coming here. That information I had was spot on. And Boris Johnson even made the front pages of the Norwegian press saying publicly, Britain is in a proxy war with Russia.
And that's what it
They're
is.
not interested in peace. What Starmer has done to the British economy is deplorable. And he's not going to change. It's only going to get worse. I wouldn't invest anything in Britain at this point because as it gets even worse, he'll clamp down on capital
Capital
controls.
controls.
Now you can look up, it's gone under most people's radar, but just last week, the EU passed a new regulation. If you're going into the EU or leaving, you must disclose all your bank accounts. France, I mean, they routinely go after anybody that tries to even pay $1,000 or 1,000 euros in cash for a hotel room. Spain, you need government permission to withdraw more than 3,000 out of your own bank account.
I read that.
I mean, this is what I'm talking about. It shows that they are desperate. And at the same time, they're clamping down on free speech. You know, and they want to call Putin a dictator? Really? This is exactly what the Soviet Union used to do. It's, and so I don't see this as getting any better. When the computer's showing a panic cycle for the euro next year, I think we have to be careful here. I was asked to do a report, which I'm hopefully going to have out by tomorrow, for Washington on any possible peace plan with Russia. And I've gone through everything top to bottom that I could possibly do. And what I am suggesting, and I believe they are now listening to me, to be even called in and being asked to do this was a surprise.
Yeah, surprise for me.
I've been yelling that their enemy is not Putin, it's the EU. I think they are now waking up to that.
Well, Marty, I hope you have the right ears and the right ears listen to you.
I'm giving it a shot. I mean, it's,
I'll
I've been
say a
trying
prayer
to.
for you. I hope you're successful, man.
What people have to understand is that we have, probably the most sophisticated AI computer in the world. The forecasts come from that. That's not my personal opinion. I've been trying like hell to defeat my own computer. I lose. So it's not something I want to see either. All right.
No, loud and clear. Loud and clear.
I was hoping that if in putting out these forecasts, people would wake up and say, okay, fine, maybe we better do something to stop it. So getting a call to actually do something like this, I've always gotten calls typically on the foreign exchange side, any crisis to do with that, creating the Euro, G5. I was even called in by China for the 97 Asian currency crisis. I'm usually the number one guy who gets called into all that stuff. The Swiss peg break, all that. So now I seem to be getting calls on the geopolitical side.
Well, I hope
So
they
it's
listen to you.
interesting.
It is interesting. I hope they listen to you, my friend.
We don't have, I don't see much choice. So what I can say that the guts of the report that I'm suggesting is that I've got, and they know I have direct sources into Russia as well. Putin does not want war.
He's shown a lot of
He offered,
restraint, I think.
oh, tremendous. And this is, I think, what scared them. When Khrushchev had to back down from the Cuban Missile Crisis, I explained there was a coup. Brezhnev took over, he was thrown out, and then he got more of a hardline Russian, hardliner, neocon, or whatever you want to call him. From their perspective, he just embarrassed Russia. He lost to America. Okay. So that was a psychological blow from that perspective. I put out a book, The Plot to Seize Russia. It's on Amazon. All right. In the very beginning of it, I got a hold of all the declassified documents from the Clinton administration. The first thing I put in there, so you can see it, because everybody, when they hear it, they go, what? After 91, and Gorbachev comes to power, they offered Russia to join NATO.
Right.
That, again, sparked the second coup.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, against Gorbachev. That's when Yeltsin had to stand on the tank
mm-hmm.
and he talked to people, the military down, don't fire on your own people. They didn't, so the coup failed.
Mm-hmm.
So what I have been warning them, you better not try to embarrass Putin so that he has to leave Ukraine with his tail between his legs.
Mm-hmm.
You do that, you're going to get a third coup.
Yeah.
And yeah. Next time, you're getting somebody like Medef or the real hardliners, and they are just their version of our Lindsey Graham.
Yeah, you know? They're not going to show restraint. They'll be dropping nukes.
And plus, you got Kalas, who is the number two now in the EU government,
mm-hmm.
the former PM of Estonia. She's a ruthless neocon.
Mm-hmm.
And she met with a foreign minister from China.
Mm-hmm.
And I know because I had people that were actually there. Let me know what happened. She mm-hmm. was trying to browbeat China into withdrawing all support for Russia. His response was that we are not prepared to see Russia lose. Why? He said, we know we would be next.
Yeah.
Which is very true.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why they want to drag it out.
And they now know that this is not a war with Ukraine. This is mm-hmm. a war with NATO.
NATO. Yep.
I mean, all the Ukrainian troops were trained by NATO.
Yeah.
You have, Boris Johnson, like I said, coming out saying we're in a proxy war, with Russia. Everybody knows this.
Yeah. Yeah.
They know that it's not Ukraine anymore.
Yeah. It's east for west. Yeah. It's Russia versus NATO.
That's what I'm more concerned about. So what I have suggested, and I think it will be on our site tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to allow everybody to download for free because I'm giving it to Washington, so let everybody in the world see it.
Mm-hmm.
But basically what I'm saying is, like, for example, Putin proposed in Alaska creating a tunnel and cooperation in Antarctica and in the Arctic. What people don't know, you've heard about rare earths, but I don't think they really understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
China has a virtual monopoly on rare earths.
Right, right, yeah.
For us to produce one F-35,
mm-hmm.
it takes 920 pounds of rare earth.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
This is why Trump was talking about Canada being the 51st state.
Yeah, yeah. No, makes sense.
And green.
Yep.
All right. Yep. It's more of a national security standpoint.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Ukraine, my source is there. Zelensky is trying to say, but oh, our rare earths. Rare earths are not really rare.
Mm-hmm.
What it is that you rarely find a strong concentration of them to mm-hmm. make it a viable mining project.
Mm-hmm.
China has that.
Yeah.
So does Russia.
Yeah.
Russia has the technology to even do that in frozen land. Mm-hmm. We do not.
Mm-hmm.
So my proposal, I'm hoping that you're going to listen, all right? We drop the sanctions against Russia. We allow American companies to do joint ventures with Russia
mm-hmm.
for rare earths. What will that do? I see it as two strategic goals. One, it puts NATO on notice that we are going in partnership with Russia.
With Russia, yeah.
Two, it would help to resurrect the Nixon-Kissinger divide and conquer between Russia and China.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Russia is also dependent on China for rare earths.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they have an incentive to do such a joint venture. We have the capital. They have the know-how.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if we do a joint venture, allow American companies to go in.
Mm-hmm.
And I suggest that to give them confidence mm-hmm. to do so
mm-hmm.
is that the U.S. and Russia gives a joint guarantee against any assets being appropriated.
Yeah, yeah. Marty, I got another interview really in about 30 seconds here. How can people find this proposal? Is it going to be on your website? And how do people find you?
The website's armstrongeconomics.com. It's free. It's you don't have to put in an email or anything. We don't even sell advertising. And hopefully it should be on there by tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, everybody, this interview will literally get 100,000 views. So I will link to it as soon as you put it up. So I got to run and okay. You're a busy guy too. I want to thank you so much. I'd love to have you on again really soon within the next 4 to 6 weeks.
All right. Take care of yourself.
Thanks, Marty.
All right. No problem.